Welcome to Rome. This is The Bittersweet Life with Katie Sewell and Tiffany Parks. Hello, this is The Bittersweet Life. I'm Katie Sewell.
I'm Tiffany Parks.
Tiffany over in Rome, Katie in Seattle. And a couple weeks ago, episode 520, The Case Against Travel was the title of the episode. We talked about an article from The New Yorker that basically made the argument that travel doesn't make you better. Maybe it makes you worse. And today, we wanted to just touch back on that idea a little bit and share some of the comments that came in from our listeners in response to that article. People reading the article itself and also listening to the episode. So, you know me, Tiffany, I love a good voice memo. And so I'm going to start with a voice memo. And this is from Nancy.
Hello, Katie and Tiffany. I really enjoyed your Case Against Travel episode, and I wanted to share some of my thoughts with you. Full confession, I love, I crave, I do travel. However, I do not enjoy tourists, which sounds awful, but that's the truth. I don't enjoy large tour groups. I don't enjoy loud people. I don't enjoy too many bodies in my personal space. I love to travel and see historically significant areas and buildings and museums, but I want to imagine I'm there at that time. I don't want to be sharing it with everybody. Terribly selfish, I realize. And I am not rich enough to book these places to have to myself, so I just have to deal with it. When I travel, I like to seek hidden gems. I take public transportation. I check out their grocery stores. I want to experience what life is truly like in the places I go. So Rome, Valletta, Thessaloniki. I love all of it, but I really want to see what's beyond the top layer of tourist attractions. And certainly in my experience, some travel has changed me. I've been to South Africa, and I was gobsmacked. It is a stunningly beautiful country with such a sad, ugly history. And while apartheid is over, it's not over. I see remnants all over the place. I've been to Nairobi, and when I was there, I really believed I'd seen poverty until I went to Haiti. Now, Haiti is so poor, and their day-to-day needs are not being met. They're nowhere near being met. The leadership is corrupt. And the people in general are just lacking in hope. It is a very heavy, sad, dangerous country. And what impressed is not the right word, but I guess what impacted me the most is how close it is to the United States. I could be there in a few hours on a boat. So it really made an impact on me, on my life. And travel, in my opinion, it's a privilege, and I am so grateful for the privilege I've had, the travel I've done, and the travel I look forward to. Much more to come. Love your podcast. Thanks so much.
So that's Nancy.
Oh, that was a great message. Thank you, Nancy. Thank
yes.
you.
Several points in that message. Did anything stand out to you that you want to respond to?
Well, all of it, really, but I guess, yeah, it's true that when you travel, especially when you go places that are maybe not typical tourist attractions, one of the biggest things that is going to happen to you if you're open and if you're curious is that you're going to learn. You're going to learn something. You might learn the history of the country. You might learn about some political stuff that you didn't know about before. Or you might learn the depth of poverty that can exist in the world. So at the very least, I feel, again, traveling is such a learning experience. And if learning doesn't change us, what does change us?
I love that she admits that she doesn't like tourists, because on the last show, we talked about how we are tourists and also cannot not like being around tourists. I also liked this point, and maybe I misinterpreted what she said, but she said that part of the reason that she doesn't like tourists or being amongst the horde of other people who are there to see the same thing she is because she likes to imagine that she's at that time And what I took that to mean is if you're standing in a church that was built in the 1600s in Rome, for instance, you like to imagine that you're seeing it in the 1600s in Rome. Do you hear that the same way?
Oh, see, I missed that point, but now that you're saying that, it makes sense. Because I kind of didn't get what she meant by that particular word choice. But now that you say that, I think you're probably right. And I love that because I'm the same way, especially as a young person traveling. That's what first got me excited about traveling. I think when I was in France abroad for the first time as a 14-year-old, being like, I'm back in time right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's hard to do that when you've got like, you know, a big horde of sweaty people in khaki shorts and pastel colored polo shirts around.
Taking photo after photo after photo. It also makes me want to point out that we haven't talked about it for a number of weeks, but we still do actually have 5 rooms available for our Rome tour in October. And what the Rome tour that we're taking some of our listeners on this October, early October, the 6th to the 12th, is basically a how do you see the unseen sights, and us showing you not just the history of the city itself, but showing you the secrets, the places where the other tourists are not. And it's worth going. I mean, one thing I was noting when we were on our Rome trip last year was how many of the places we went to where we could have been the only people in the city. There might have been one or two other people there, but it was just us stepping back in time.
Yes.
You know?
Especially love stepping into the oratory of San Silvestro. Katie, do you remember that moment? You walk into this church, this medieval church that looks like a fortress, and you have to buzz for the nun. And the nun appears like behind a grated window.
Yes.
And you give her a couple euros and she tells you where to go. Maybe she turns the lights on, I'm not sure. And you go into this little chapel that, you know, was frescoed in the 1300s.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the only person in there. We're the only people in there. Yeah. And we can stand around there as long as we want. And there's no one saying no photos. And there's no one pushing us out. And there's no one making noise and being obnoxious. And it's amazing.
It had that tingle of the spine magical feeling, because there was the time when we first walked in there and you knocked on, you're like, I think I'm supposed to just knock on this window. And you knocked on the window, and then there was like this long pause, and you're like, she said she was going to be here. Is anybody going to come? And then she appears and we're like, oh my gosh. And yeah, having an old chapel like that to ourselves, where, you know, we got to sort of just lounge around and like I was sitting on the steps of the altar, like just looking up at the ceiling and stuff. I mean, it was just the kind of casual magic that you hope for in Rome. So I'm just putting it out there. This is available for you this coming October. 5 more rooms available. If you need information, just send us an email, bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com. And it's not the cheapest trip in the world, but it will be one of the most memorable trips I'm willing to wager that you'll ever take in your entire life. All right, I'm going to leave it there, though, and return to the comments from our listeners. All right, I want to move on to, this is a comment from Patricia, who made this comment on Facebook. She says, I had read the article, The Case Against Travel, before the podcast came out. I found it to be a bit grouchy. And while it makes some points that apply to some people, there was not much there that applies to me. I am 76, and I am heading off next week for a month of travel, meeting up with an 18-year-old granddaughter who is right now on a 3-week rail trip from Brussels to Paris to Geneva to Vienna to Bucharest, all of which she has planned herself for her gap year. She will fly into Edinburgh to meet us. We've originally planned for she and I to do a no reservations 2 weeks in the UK train trip, but now we will be joined at various times by sisters and friends over 2 weeks, and then I get to stay by myself for a week. There are people who do this kind of thing all the time. For us, it is better than spending $10,000 a week to take a family to Disneyland. We know a lot of people who do that, but that is just not our way. And to each their own. Writers have to have something to write about. A negative article sometimes sells quicker. And I enjoyed your conversation. So that's Patricia.
I love that. Just love that idea of that trip. And I think that both of them are going to have the time of their lives, and it's going to be something extremely memorable. And I'm sure that her granddaughter will remember and treasure that forever.
Mm-hmm. We talked last week's episode with John Roderick about doing road trips with his 90-year-old mother and his 12-year-old daughter. Have you ever done an intergenerational trip like that?
I did, not a road trip, but my mom took her mom to Hawaii when I was probably 8 or so. So I remember that trip. Although, you know, so long ago, it's hard for me to remember. I hate to say it, but it is. But I've done an intergenerational road trip with my mom and my son,
mm-hmm.
which was super fun. which was almost two years ago, going to the Grand Canyon and some other places in northern Arizona. So yeah, I have done a little bit of that. And I remember that comment that John made about the amount of hours in the car are necessarily going to be fewer per day because of both the 90-year-old and the 12-year-old for different reasons.
I also loved that he pointed out, and it will be interesting, I wonder how Patricia will find this to be true as well. I loved how he pointed out that everyone's kind of mission, so to speak, on the trip is different. Like what the 90-year-old wants to see is very different from what the 12-year-old wants to see. And then him squarely in the middle has something else that he wants to see. You know, it's like the wide range of human interests as well, all colliding into one car trip. And I'm sure Patricia will find that to be true also along the way. All right. So do you have another comment? Perhaps choose one from Instagram.
Yes, I do have a comment from Tony over on Instagram. And she writes, honestly, when I first read the title of this episode, I thought it was going to be about the environmental cost of travel, because I know that's a very pertinent debate right now. But this was really fascinating, too. I just read the article and really don't agree with it for a lot of the same reasons both of you didn't. I also think that the argument that we become spectators to locals and are thus prevented from truly connecting with them is outdated. Nowadays, it's so easy to connect with locals online or on an app, meet up, find new friends. Maybe that's a generational thing, though. I'm not sure. When I lived in France, I became really fascinated with debates around arts subsidies and what constituted quote-unquote real culture versus projects just to attract and please tourists. There's an important class element to this as well, especially in France, and large amounts of tourists, their nationalities, preferences, behaviors, etc., really influence what cultures are even allowed to exist in a space at all. Anyway, thank you so much for another great episode and a wonderful weekend to you both. All the best, Tony. I think she means... I mean, what I get from that, if I'm reading it correctly, is that when they have art exhibits and installations and things like that, that it's oftentimes not fully representative of all types of cultures, that maybe it leans heavily towards certain cultures rather than others. That's what I feel like she meant, but I'm not sure I'm reading that right either. What constitutes real culture versus projects just to attract or please tourists? So it's like, is this exhibit on because we really want to delve deep into this artist or into this art form or into this aspect of culture? Or are we putting this on simply because we want to get tourists? I can kind of think of an example of this. When I was in Spain, my mother and I went to see a flamenco concert in a cave.
Okay. Cool.
And yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool, but like it was totally marketed as this, you know, very cool, very Spanish traditional thing, but it was totally a tourist thing. And, you know, I felt it the entire time. Like they took us on a bus to get there because it's kind of like up the side of a mountain and into this cave that's obviously been fitted out with tables and chairs and electricity and everything. But and there were dancers in, you know, traditional costume, and it was great. It was a very fun event, but you know that there's no locals there. It's the same with in Rome. They sometimes have opera concerts in the churches. It's always the same opera arias, like the most famous opera arias that everybody knows. It's always the same every night.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know that it's not like if you go to the actual state opera house, there is an artistic director who is delving into what opera is and is searching out new ways to interpret it. And, you know, it's a real artistic exploration. Whereas these opera arias in churches are just, it's just for the tourists. It's just so you can say, yeah, I heard Nessun Dorma song in Rome in a church.
Yeah. Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I totally get that. And that's an interesting thing, too, because there's the similar thing in Vietnam. And if you go to Hanoi, you can go see the traditional water puppet show where these people are performing with wooden puppets on a flooded stage. And it's basically the same show every night for years and in perpetuity. I mean, in that way, yeah, there isn't a single local who's like, you know what, let's go check out the traditional Vietnamese water puppet show tonight. You know, nobody's doing that. It is only tourists. But it also is an interesting thing because if it is this traditional old tradition, in some ways it is the tourists that are the only thing that's still keeping it alive. You know, if the locals are now on their phones and devices and have no need to go see a water puppet show, then, you know, perhaps water puppet shows used to be the rage back in the 1700s. I have no idea. I've never actually researched the history of the water puppet show.
No, I think it's more that if I just had to argue with you on this, I think it's not so much that, I mean, I can't speak for Vietnam, but I know in Italy, it's not that like there's no Italians going to opera. It's just that the Italians who go see opera are really passionate about it, right? So they want to go see, you know, the new production by this cutting edge new director with this, you know, wonderful soprano that's their favorite. You know, I mean, they want to go to see the real stuff. If you are in Spain, you're going to go and to your favorite local smoky bar where this amazing dancer is performing and nobody knows about, you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like it doesn't mean that you need tourists to keep the culture going. It's just that those concerts are specifically tailor-made for tourists. Like they've got all the boxes X'd, you know? Mm-hmm. Like they're going to get the cave, they're going to get the pretty red dress, they're going to get the castanets, and they're going to get a bottle of, you know, cava at the end. You know, it's like, you know, everything's going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get that. I mean, I think the water puppet theater, I mean, maybe there's hundreds of water puppet theaters throughout Vietnam and I have no idea. The only one I've ever been to, because they put on the same show every single night, they automatically like make themselves irrelevant to any local. Because even if a local goes, are they going to go see the show the same thing over and over and over again? Mm-hmm. Probably not. I mean, they're obviously gearing themselves toward tourism. So yeah, I can totally see that too. I mean, I guess another example is one that you well know from Seattle. And for those of you who have actually come to visit Seattle, which I always encourage, or maybe I don't, maybe I should be more encouraging to come to Seattle. But, you know, one of the things that tourists love when they come to see the city of Seattle is they love the fish throwers.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, there is a booth where people can buy fish and ship it across the country. They'll ship it right to your home. You can have fish from Seattle waiting on your doorstep by the time you get home. But the reason people buy the fish is because these men will pick up the fish that you ordered and fling it across the store. And another person will catch the fish in the air and then wrap it up and ship it to you. And so I think sometimes people buy the fish just for the sheer joy of watching a dead fish fly through the air into the hands of a waiting man. It's a very odd tradition.
But it's one of those icons, isn't it? Remember we did that episode on city icons? And, you know, what's the icon of the city? And of course, an icon can be at the Space Needle or the Colosseum. But I think an icon can also be, you know, those, I mean, everybody who knows anything about Seattle, I mean, it's even in the movie Sleepless in Seattle, like they've got a shot of it. They know that if you go to this certain booth in Pike Place Market, and they might have to look in their guidebook to see exactly which one it is, but they're going to see the guys throwing the fish around. And that can be an icon of the city too. But I do wonder, like, are these guys just throwing the fish now at this point because the tourists expect it?
Well, I mean, it's their thing. I mean, they are trained to throw the fish. But I mean, I was going to use it as an example of a tourist activity that is actually still sort of an entertaining thing for the locals. It's kind of hard to not walk by that booth if I'm down by Pike Place Market and I see that they are about to huck a fish. Like, I can tell somebody has paid their money and this fish is about to go flying. I'm going to stand there with everybody else and watch them throw this fish. There's just something about it that's like pure joy that makes it both hokey and not hokey at the same time.
Totally get it.
I mean, it's totally hokey, but I mean, it works. Mm-hmm. They sell more fish probably than the stand, like a little bit down the way, I imagine, just for the sheer theater of it. They're also next to the Pike Place Piggy Bank, the big gold pig that stands there that everybody likes to sit on and take their pictures on. So their location is also absolutely perfect. Since you are a longtime former Seattle resident, do you know what the name of that golden pig is?
You know, I think I used to know. It's not Mildred, but it's a name like Mildred. What's the first letter?
It's R.
I can't remember, Katie, but I know I used to know. Is it Ralph?
It's a girl. It's a name from the Bible.
It's a girl pig.
I don't think it was named after the Bible, but I'm just giving you a hint that it is a name that appears in the Bible.
Rachel?
That's right.
That doesn't sound right.
Nope, that's right.
Oh, it is right. Okay, yeah, I didn't know then. I would have remembered the name Rachel.
Rachel's
did
it.
Did not know that.
All right, let's do one more email. I should have mentioned at the beginning of this episode, if you haven't yet heard the episode 520, The Case Against Travel, it might have been helpful to hear that.
Make
before
sure you
this
go
one.
Listen.
Yeah. All right, here is one more email. This one is from John. Hello, Katie and Tiffany. I enjoyed your episode on The Case Against Travel and dug up the New Yorker article to read it. Overall, I have to disagree that we should not travel. Seems like across the board, through the select people that we've chosen to air on this episode, most people seem to disagree with this article. But John goes on. Whether it is domestic or international travel, I believe that when you are exposed to other cultures, you come to view the world differently than those who have never been out of their home state or their home country. The podcast got me thinking about a key aspect of travel that makes most travelers observers rather than participants. For most people, it is very difficult to actually get to know and establish friendships when traveling. If you are in a location for a short time, it is impossible to rectify this situation. So it got me thinking, how do you connect with locals and establish friendships? One way is to have a hobby that connects you to people worldwide. For me, that is amateur radio. Ham radio. I've made personal friends in many countries, and I'm in contact both on the radio and via FaceTime or Skype throughout the year. Many people think that this hobby is waning, but in fact, it's not. It's very popular worldwide. And then he says, other ways are through music, through academic pursuits, or friendships that you establish through business contacts. So he's kind of touching on the same aspect of things that Tony was touching on, which is, although her argument was it is easy to connect to locals if you try in this modern era, he's basically saying it's hard to connect to locals, but there are ways to do it. If you're following an interest that you have a personal interest with, try to find people abroad who share your interests. I really like his approach, actually, because when you were first reading Tony's thing, I was thinking, is it easy to connect to locals? Because I have plenty of experience traveling and connecting with locals. But generally speaking, when I think of my memories of having really great connections with locals, it's often because I've traveled to the same place multiple times. When I think about places I've only been one time, it gets a little hazy when I try to think about memories of connecting with locals, you know, beyond talking to a waiter in a restaurant or something like that.
Yeah, I think that if I had to say a trick, obviously, I love John's ideas, but in general, go to a smaller town that's not necessarily touristy. I mean, it doesn't have to be a place that tourists never go, but, you know, just a place that isn't in the top, you know, the top five cities in that country, you know, you will be more interesting to the locals. My experience with this was when I was in Lucca. Now, granted, I was there for a month. Not 4 days or 3 days. So I had more time. But I was there on a music program back when I was in college. My friend and I from school, we met these two Italian sisters. And they became our buddies. Like, we hung out with them for the whole time. And their male friends, too. Their male friends might have been the ones who actually approached us, to be perfectly honest. But we became friends with all of them. There were guys and girls. They were our age, I believe. And they were all from this kind of smallish town of Lucca that, you know, a tourist might go to on a day trip, but it's not a common spot. And so, you know, we were interesting to them. It's like, oh my gosh, Americans, let's meet them. Let's talk to them, you know? I really felt a rapport with these two young women, these two girls. I really enjoyed getting to know them. So that would be my tip.
Yeah, that's good. I really like John's too about asking your like business associates and your friends before you go to a place. When I was moving to Rome, which is different than traveling to Rome, but when I was moving there, I was mentioning it to various people and people would say, oh my gosh, my friend so-and-so lives there. You should really check that person out or whatever. And they would give me an email and I would reach out to that person. And that's how I met some of the early friendships that I had there. And one of those suggestions was a journalist named Ugo, who, you know, was my first local Italian friend. And that was from a guy I knew here in Seattle who had gone to Rome and met Ugo and was like, you got to meet this guy, Ugo, if you go over there. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, Ugo was more than happy to hang out and get a lunch with me and tell me about the city in those very early weeks that I was there. So that can be kind of a fun thing, too, is like just reach out to a friend of a friend. And sometimes they're willing to meet up with you and give you the lowdown when you first get there, which is so helpful.
Yeah, there are definitely ways.
I really also love his notion of traveling to pursue an interest of yours. And that's how you end up meeting people. I did have a very good friend who used to go on these trips where the whole mission of it was you were going to go to, say, learn how to dye fabric indigo in a traditional manner or say something. That's interesting but obscure. But you're going to a place to go learn how to do a specific thing for a few days. And I've never actually done that where I've traveled somewhere to go learn a different skill intentionally since I've been vacationing. I've done internships that did that, but that's a little different. But I kind of love that idea of finding some obscure thing you would like to learn and traveling to where you can learn how to do that thing as a way of meeting people and doing something new.
Yeah. And just to add one last thought to kind of our conversation from our original conversation on episode 520 that I don't think I mentioned on that episode. In addition to obviously learning about the place that you're going and learning about the world and all of that, you also learn about yourself when you travel, I feel. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times that can be simply learning that you can handle something that you did not know that you could handle. Because you can sometimes get in really tight situations mm-hmm. when you're traveling. You know, things can happen. Things can really go wrong. I think that traveling is a great way to, first of all, obviously challenge yourself, but also just be like, to learn, oh my gosh, I have more capabilities than I would have guessed.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. On the flip side of that, if you're not a supporter of this show, you might want to join us over on Patreon because we just did an episode not too long ago about Tiffany and my worst travel behavior, because the article's crux was that travel doesn't necessarily bring out the best in you. Sometimes it brings out the worst in you. And so we did a little in-depth exploration of that over on the Patreon in one of our bonus episodes. If you support the show for as little as $5 a month, you not only keep the lights on over here, which, you know, is always important for paying the monthly bills that come to support a show like this, you also get to hear stories that we might not tell on the main show, stories about how sometimes travel does bring out the worst in you, and sometimes even behavior that you think is okay when you do it, you later reflect on that and realize that, maybe that wasn't okay. And we explore that more over on the Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/thebittersweetlifepodcast. And really, your support is so valuable. It's so valuable, in fact, that I will send you a handwritten thank you note in the mail for pitching in to keep this little independent show that could going for all these years. So thank you so much. And remember that Rome trip, if you want to be a tourist but not be on the tourist trail in Rome and come to see that city in a way that you've never seen it before, even if you've been there before, I hope you will join us in October, October 6th to the 12th in Rome. It's going to cost you something, but I promise you it will not be money wasted. It will be a week that you never forget. Tiffany, I don't know if I told you this. I was recently at a funeral that I referenced with John Roderick on last week's show. And I ran into a guy there, a guy named David, who knew one of our people who came on the last trip to Rome, Michael. And I walked up to him and said, oh, David, so nice to see you. I hadn't seen him for a while. And he said, I just went out to breakfast with Mike, and he was telling me about the trip that you guys all went on last October. And I said, oh, really? Yeah, we had such a good time having him there. And he gives me this almost mystified look. And he says it was the best trip he's ever taken in his life. And I said, really? Wow. Is there any better compliment than one that comes through a third party? You know?
No better compliment. Oh, true. Yeah, because then you know it's true.
Yeah. Anyway, so thank you, Mike, for that comment. I hope you will follow in Mike's stead and at least explore the idea of coming with us to Rome in October of 2024. bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com. All right. Thank you for all of you who wrote in and commented about this. I love when you send in a voice memo. Thank you, Nancy, for doing that. And until next time, this is The Bittersweet Life. I'm Katie Sewell.
I'm Tiffany Parks.
Join us again. Bye.
Do you have a topic you want us to explore? Send your requests. We love to hear what you want to know. Visit thebittersweetlife.net and contact us with your questions, your adventures, your observations, your favorite episodes. We love hearing from you. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Bittersweet Life Podcast.